This is exactly right.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
On the 12th season of Tenfold More Wicked, we investigate a series of compelling mysteries from the city of Fall River, Massachusetts, where problems started generations before Lizzie Borden's murders made her a household name. Join me as we cover the misfortunes that have befallen this infamous town for more than 150 years, including the Great Fire of 1843. Season 12 premieres Monday, May 13th on Exactly Right. Follow Tenfold More Wicked on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
To talk to those parents who are fearing that change in any way, I'll say, what do you want most? You want to connect with your kid in a deep, honest, loving way. And if you want to connect with your kid, they want to feel seen and heard exactly the way they are, understood. And that's how you, that's the key. So, you know, as much as you may want them to have the perfect grades or go to the perfect college, they're going to put up walls if they feel like you're not getting them or like that's not who they're, that's not their thing.
Welcome to Parent Footprint with Dr. Dan. I'm Dr. Dan. This show is about making the world a more loving, accepting, and compassionate place, one parent, one person, and one child at a time. The key to raising healthy and engaged kids is for parents to seek the same in their own lives while striving to be the best versions of themselves each day. No matter who you are or where you came from, with increased awareness, you can be purposeful about leaving a healthy footprint for your children, your family, and all those you care about while living your own life to the fullest. Today's show is The Wisdom and Power of Teenage Girls with Chelsea Gooden. Chelsea has been an academic tutor and mentor for 16 years with a particular emphasis on the empowerment of teenage girls. She speaks regularly to audiences about gender justice, conducts workshops, and coaches parents on how to better understand and connect with their daughters. She is the mentorship director of Democracy, a nonprofit dedicated to inspiring and empowering female-identifying high school students to become future elected leaders, and founder of The Activist Cartel, where she guided an influential nationwide subscriber base to take political and social action for gender and racial equity. As an activist, she advises public figures, galvanizes volunteers, and organizes large-scale events for national nonprofits while also serving on the board of A Call to Men, which is working to end gender-based violence. Her passion to explore humanity's potential for authenticity, liberation, and empowerment permeates all of her work, and I can attest to that, people, since I just took a deep dive in her new book, which is called Underestimated: The Wisdom and Power of Teenage Girls. Chelsea's a graduate of NYU's Tisch School of the Arts and lives in Los Angeles. Chelsea, welcome to the show.
Thank you. Thank you so much. It's my joy to be here, truly.
So I'm going to start by saying your enthusiasm and energy permeates through every page of the book. And I just have to say, I came away thinking you are a force, a very positive force.
Yeah, thanks. I'm going to receive that. I've been feeling that in my heart. You know, thank you. I'm going to receive that. I do believe enthusiasm is a completely underestimated force.
So, okay, there's so many ways where I could go to start. And, where I want to jump in is you are talked about as an educator and a mentor. You're clearly do that and so much more. I would say that life coaching even underestimates it, even though that feels like a sphere of the work that you do with these girls while you're also academically, you know, as I'm reading, I'm thinking like, man, is there time to actually do school stuff? Because you are doing so much important identity, you know, I want to say counseling, guidance, mentoring. And where I'm going with this is what I was really, one of the many things that I was taken with was not only the impact that you have had on these teenagers that you have worked with over the years and the healing and support that you provide them, but conversely, how you write about through that work, how that positive impact that the girls have had on you with your teenage child, now adult.
Exactly. Yeah. I mean, in the act of writing the book, I very much work to heal my own inner teenage girl. And I hopefully model that within the book too, for adults who read it, that they can also, it's like, I always say I learned way more from the girls than I ever taught them, which is why it's called the wisdom of teenage girls too. And I'm working to be their microphone, their portal of what they want to say.
So it's a symbiotic relationship. It's been a symbiotic experience with you helping these teens on their path, this path of growing up these days, which seems more complicated than ever. And then your own healing and growth through these very special relationships.
Yeah. If anything, I feel like I've been the person for them that maybe I didn't have growing up. And so that act of learning how to show up for them in the way that they needed helped heal that for me as well.
Yeah.
And then in turn, I want to help them shout to the world what they want to say, right? So my intention here is to be their microphone, their portal to what they want to say to the world.
You have done that. You have done that in spades. And It with the idea of the portal, the beginning of your book, there's a very powerful quote from a teenager, which just sets the stage, where she says, "I want to inform them I'm not silent because I have nothing to say. I'm silent because nobody is listening."
Yeah, and that's how teenage girls feel. Mm-hmm. They feel like no one's listening. They feel misunderstood. They feel, you know, the beginning of the book, I say, if adults could know anything about you that you wish you could tell them, the main response was, we're so much smarter than you think we are. Mm-hmm. You know, they feel misunderstood. And that was what inspired me to write the book too, is they just kept saying these incredible, smart things to me. And I was like, people are underestimating them. They're fearing them. They're dismissing, minimizing. Everyone loves to characterize teenage girls as emotional and dramatic and crazy. And they just feel so dismissed by that.
Mm-hmm. And I can say as a, so two of our three are girls and one is 19 and one is 23. And it was like everything resonated. I mean, as I imagine what their challenges were, the ones we knew about, the ones we didn't know about, our own parental concern, worry, how do we handle this? What do we do? And I think so much of the time as parents, we're put in these situations that trigger our own worry and anxiety, which then contribute to responding or not responding in a way that would be most helpful, because we're tamping down. No, you can't do that. Or no, that's not right. Or, you know, we get into lecture mode and it comes from our own place, our own path, our own parenting. And to have this space to really focus and listen to them and put our own anxieties, beliefs, fears aside is the goal, and it is hard to do.
Oh my gosh, you nailed it. Like, this is so, it's so heartwarming, honestly, to hear a parent talk about that exact dynamic. And I get it. I have so much compassion about how hard it is, because yeah, it's basically how we are triggered. Then we project onto the kid with our own agenda or judgment. And what happens is it creates shame. It creates walls, you know, because it's not their story. It's your story. It's your own stuff. Mm-hmm. And the more, you know, a lot of the book is actually like turning the finger back at ourselves. ourselves and what kind of work we can do. Because I love to just meet the girl exactly where she's at and just say like, well, how would you like to handle it? What are your thoughts on it? And I'm mm-hmm. always, when parents ask me specific advice, it's the response is almost all the time, have you asked her? Mm-hmm. Like, you know, what have you, right. what are her thoughts on it? And they're always like, they think they need to come in with some preset, perfect wisdom or solution. And the truth is the girls are so good at actually finding organic solutions that work for them if they are empowered to trust themselves.
And when they step into their power, I mean, it sky's the limit, and it is intimidating to people, right? It's like teenage girls, and I would say women in their power, this is that patriarchy that men don't always know what to do with it. And a lot of times, from what we know from the research, female bosses are often harder on female employees than many male, you know, like, so there's this like intimidation factor that yeah. when females step into their power, that we, I think as a culture are slowly getting there, but it's this newer phenomenon you wrote about in the book, things that I didn't even know, like in the early 70s, first time women could have credit cards, could run in the Boston Marathon. I mean, things that seem so ludicrous right. are so real not that long ago.
Exactly. And so, yeah, I have like chills. You're so yeah. right. Like that, because the book is a lot about too, how we've also as a society created a structure and a framework that doesn't allow girls to step into their full power or women mm-hmm. to step into their full power. So that's why I am also trying to move upstream to a younger age where it's like, how can we, so we're not trying to fix all the wounds later in therapy, and instead mm-hmm. we build around the ideas and the world that they want to create. And so that's why the last chapter is power. And yes. to me, it's all about redefining this power, this idea of power, which has been characterized historically as masculine narratives of domination or oppression or status or wealth. And what, when I talk to the girls and I ask them, what would you imagine a world would be like if the majority of the world was women leaders? The answers they gave me were incredible. It was about equality and generosity and care and all these quality and empathy. And you know, whether you feel like women leaders would do that or not, it's beside the point. It's kind of actually the world that they just want to envision, where what if care was considered powerful? What if empathy was considered powerful?
Right.
What kind of world could we create that allows mm-hmm. women to step into their power?
And I do think we are in the midst of a major transition of our traditional social structures are all being incredibly challenged. And we know that many of them haven't worked for a long time, and it's becoming more and more apparent. And so this idea of, and with all the work that you do outside of this, you know, in your nonprofit work, in your advocacy work, supporting, advocating for, and growing these future female leaders and this whole generation of helping us all get to our next evolution as a human species, because things are happening and there's changes happening and we need more changes.
Yeah. And I care just as much about the men and the boys too, right? Like I'm on the yes. board of the nonprofit yes. called the Men, and it's just a different approach. The work I do with them, but a lot of it also is that this current structure, our framework, doesn't serve the men and the boys either.
No.
I mean, the suicide rate is so high for mm-hmm. you know, men. It's intense for everyone.
Yes. Yes. And I believe you also mentioned some of the work of bell hooks in the book as well. And bottom line, totally agree with you. We're focusing on females, and we need males to hear this, whether they're the dads. Everyone is involved in changing the deep-rooted patriarchy and the aspects of toxic masculinity and how that impacts men and how that impacts girls and women.
Well, and the truth is that if women could have ended the gender-based violence against them, we would have done it by now. We would have ended it. But the power is in the hands of the dominant group.
Right.
And it's really men that we have to look to make those changes in a big way too.
I was, this is reminding me, I was talking to a young adult who was talking about her family, and she, I thought, summed it up nicely. There was a lot of trauma in her family. And she said, basically, the men in my family were abused and traumatized And as a result, they then have done so to the women.
Yeah.
How it just, it's a cycle. It's a cycle.
Yeah, and that phrase, hurt people, hurt people.
Right. Right.
So when, you know, and it's interesting, I feel like Gen Zs, I talk about it in the book, mm-hmm. how good they are at compassion. They're so into mental health issues and psychology. They're way ahead of the game than mm-hmm. you know, most adults I know. And they'll often, when I talk to them about mean girls or a bully, I'll often ask them, well, what do you think, you know, what is that girl's home life like? What are her parents? And they'll be like, oh, well, I know her dad's never around or mom's always criticizing her. I was like, how do you think that is for her? And they're like, mm-hmm. oh, it sounds awful. And I'm like, you know, do you think she's maybe functioning out of a place of pain and mm-hmm. she's kind of hurting people because she's in pain herself? And the girls are like, yeah, oh my gosh, that sucks. Like they mm-hmm. get it in a compassionate way that it's not just about some girl being mean, that there's a much larger narrative going on. And again, I bring it back to the wisdom of those girls. And what if we leaned into that type of narrative?
Mm-hmm. Well, and you also mentioned about mean girls. We certainly experienced that in our home. But you were talking about there seems to be a shift with the mean girl narrative and the mean girl, like there's changes happening. So
yes,
tell us about that, because that
gave
me some, that was uplifting.
Yes, I am telling you, this culture, Gen Z in particular, is so much making shifts towards girls supporting girls and mm-hmm. women supporting women. Mm-hmm. They don't, you know, I came from a generation that there was that idea that there was only one seat at the table for the woman at the boardroom. And so we were all competing against each other for that one position they were going to hire a woman for. And it created, and that we had to act more masculine to be a boss type of thing. The Gen Z is not like that. They are all for the girls. I mean, they cheer each other on in ways. I mean, they cheer me on. The amount of just in my own Instagram comments of them being like, you go, girl, da, 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 you know, with tons of exclamation points. I'm like, I love this, right? Mm-hmm. And we shouldn't just dismiss it. We should be like, that's a positive thing. Let's uplift that. And you know mm-hmm. how their passion for Taylor Swift
right.
is beautiful. It's literally reinvigorated the national economy, right? But again, people love to minimize and be like, oh, they're just silly girls just loving this musician, right?
Right.
No, it's powerful.
Power, right. Yeah, right, right. And Taylor, at the recording, the Super Bowl just happened, so obviously Taylor is getting a lot of press. And to your point, what Taylor, I mean, she's an amazing musician, artist, entrepreneur, but it's beyond the music. Her following is, they follow her as a person and what she represents and how she is a leader
yes.
in so many ways.
Yes. And she's a leader. She's a woman supporting woman type mm-hmm. of leader too. Mm-hmm.
So choice is a really, a theme that goes throughout this book is choice. And I liked you took a page from AA, the idea of love, let others voluntarily evolve. And I just, AA has so many powerful sayings that really, you know, keep your own side of the street clean. You know, like it's like so many things that we just go back to these simple phrases, hard to put into practice, it really can anchor us. So say a little bit about this, the power of giving teens choice and how little we actually do.
Oh my gosh, I know. And so it's about giving them their own sense of agency. And what I found is if you come in and try to fix, advise, give them a solution, right, their wall's going to go up and they're not going to hear it because they just feel kind of criticized and told what to do. And I've learned profoundly that if you phrase everything as a question where you actually ask a girl, what do you think the solution is? How would you like to handle it? She has fantastic ideas and it may not be the same one I had in my head, but what happens is she owns it. She's like, oh, okay, well, this is my idea. This is my solution. I want to make it work. And then if it doesn't work, she learns the mistake of it too. Mm-hmm. Whereas if you force her to, you know, you tell her she should do that and it doesn't work out, she just blames you anyway. It's not like mm-hmm. she learns from it at all. So there's a pro to if when her solution works out, she develops self-trust. She believes her own thoughts are powerful and that she makes good choices. And then you affirm that. If her choice doesn't work out, then she actually learns the mistake from it, you know, grows from it in the way that she needs to, builds resilience. And so that act of truly just listening, meeting her where she's at with no personal agenda, no judgment, no shame, and being like, What do you think? You know, how do you want to handle it? That activates to me the space of empowerment that teenage girls are starving for.
Yes. And space. Okay. You said half of that keyword that I was going to bring up that you talk about in all of your work, holding space. And that is such a, to me, it's become a really magical term and symbolic term that my wife and I were given as parents when our kids were teenagers. And it's being, I'm hearing it more and more. The power of holding space is, it's like this paradox because it's needed when you have this teen who is emotionally, often in these situations of distress, conflict, worry, fear, sadness. And then adults, particularly parents, want to come in and fix and manage and control. And again, often this comes from their own, a parent's own fear about wanting to make it okay. The idea of holding space is actually to do something but nothing at the same time, is to have this container of support and almost like holding this energy space where someone can truly be in this place.
Parent Footprint is sponsored in part by BetterHelp.
Phil, what would you do with an extra hour in your day?
Extra hour in my day? Well, I might start by trying to clear all the audio files off of my desktop.
Good luck with that, Phil. Haven't you been trying to do that since you started podcasting many years ago? All jokes aside, it might be hard for some people to answer that question because we don't always know ourselves as well as we think. And that's where BetterHelp comes in.
BetterHelp is entirely online and provides affordable, personalized therapy to help you get to know yourself better. Don't just take our word for it. BetterHelp has over 30,000 licensed therapists trained to help you face life's challenges, big or small, and they're waiting to hear from you. BetterHelp makes starting the therapy process simple. Just complete a brief questionnaire and they'll match you with a licensed therapist.
Personally, therapy has helped me prioritize workouts and my physical health along with my mental health. Therapy has taught me to put myself at the top of my to-do list. Learn to make time for what makes you happy with BetterHelp. Visit betterhelp.com/footprint today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/footprint.
Okay, so I'm just gonna say, like, it seems like doing nothing, but it's actually everything.
Yes. Yes. And then the relief the girls feel when you're just like, yeah, that sucks. Yeah, that sounds awful. Mm-hmm. I hear you. That makes sense why you'd feel that way. Those are the only, those are all the sentences you need to say, right? And then it does help to try to listen for the exact words she's using to describe her feelings, like frustrated or disappointed. So then I'll just say, yeah, that is frustrating. That sound, that would be disappointing. And then she's just like, huh. Her body relaxes. She's just, and often she responds to me just like, oh, thanks. I just needed someone to listen. Oh, thanks. Like no one was understanding where I was coming from because she just straight up needed to feel the emotions and release them and not feel crazy that she was having them.
Right.
And yes, as a parent, like seeing a kid in pain, like your kid feeling displeasing, uncomfortable, painful feelings is so hard. And that's why we want to fix. But what happens is when we try to fix is like she hears that that's bad, like even expressing those emotions. And then she starts bottling them, containing them, repressing them, stuffing them, just like we do as adults. I find that most adults have big feelings, just like teenage girls do. We've just gotten really good at stuffing them. And they come out in so many other different ways at not best times. And what if we actually let girls have space for discomfort and understood what that looked like at an earlier age? And I do say this is a bigger thing for girls in a way that we don't like girls that are angry or, you know, these displeasing emotions that we don't allow a lot of space for women to have because we teach them to be likable and perfect, people pleasing all the time. That's the main thing we're teaching women and girls.
Which you just named two of your chapters. So the book is laid out in very specific and thoughtful ways of these main topics, people pleasing. And as you say, perfectionism. Let's talk about perfectionism. I don't think people realize how perfectionism, which is a characteristic that many people have experienced, is so common these days, and all of the very, very negative, harmful impacts that that perfectionism ends up, the outcomes of perfectionism.
Yeah. And it's kind of like a trauma response, but one that's societally affirmed, right? Because you're succeeding in a way by, you know, normal achievement standards. But what it is you trying to stabilize whatever chaotic environment might be around you by thinking like, well, if I'm just perfect enough, then everything will be okay. You know, everyone will like me, things will go perfectly, and I'll be forever, you know, it's this idea that is impossible because mm-hmm. perfection does not exist. And it's a state of tension because mm-hmm. you're like, you feel if you make a mistake or fail, it, especially for girls, it like resonates into their core identity. Like mm-hmm. I am a failure. I do not see this with boys in the same way at all. Boys, they can make mistakes, no big deal. Like they don't feel the same level of pressure.
Well, and I think with, you know, social media, you talk about media a lot too. There's this, all the pressure, it's the body image. I mean, there's definitely guys that deal with that. But when we're looking at proportions, like the pressure on how you look, how you act, how you come across, it's just,
yeah,
it's huge.
Yeah. Again, if we're talking about that cultural framework coming at girls and women, it's so many shoulds, like you should look like this, you should do this, you should speak like this. And it's all by this idea of some perfect framework that they need mm-hmm. to be ascribing to. And between ages 8 and 14, a girl's confidence drops by 30%, and it doesn't for a boy. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And it definitely that body image element comes in so strong at that age. Mm-hmm.
So connected to perfectionism, but not necessarily always a cause, we have eating disorders. And I mean, as you point out, you wrote this about college essays, and then I was thinking like, wow, that is my clinical experience as well, working with these people over the years. That, listen to this, everyone. So writing about overcoming an eating disorder, anorexia or bulimia, is now seen as too regular and common that it would not distinguish an applicant to the school. What does that say?
Yeah. I know, it's like, it's horrifying, right?
Yeah.
And I have been in the trenches with girls and eating disorders, and not even just full-blown eating disorders. I like to use the term disordered eating to mm-hmm. kind of create a bigger circle around it, because just excessive dieting or just obsession in the brain about your body and what you're eating is not healthy. We talk about social media having a huge impact on body image for girls, which is absolutely true, but it's not going anywhere. That's not, mm-hmm. social media is not going anywhere. And what I have seen happen is helping girls, again, empower their choice in mm-hmm. this conversation and helping them feel equipped to navigate that on themselves mm-hmm. rather than projecting tons of fear on them and be like, oh, it's horrible, it's awful, you're seeing all those images. And then they kind of like are a victim to social mm-hmm. media. Mm-hmm. And when I empower a girl, she can sit back and be like, oh, that image isn't real. Or she, you know, she face-tuned that. You know, like they actually are good at evaluating fake and real images online. And when you affirm that she's being smart by pointing that out and be like, oh, I didn't think about that, you know, mm-hmm. then she's like, okay, cool. And she starts trusting her own relationship to mm-hmm. social media, which is really cool. And then I bring up in the beauty chapter how much women in girls' lives talk about their own body. They criticize their own body and looks in front of girls. I mean, heck, I know women that criticize the girl's body and looks, which is just seems right. so obvious that that's not okay. But more subtly, that people don't realize, when you are criticizing your body and looks or just dieting all the time for years on end in front of your daughter, that has a huge impact. And the girls have told me that over and over and over again.
Mm-hmm. Yes, you are actually also very, I felt, fair to media. You're affirming of it and talk about the aspects where the support and the communities that social media has actually helped many of your students, your mentees, especially in the LGBTQ+ community, and how it's been a lifeline for many.
I would say the way they would say it is save their life. Now, my kids who identify in the LGBTQ community believe that social media has saved their life, especially when they're in environments where there's it's not safe, or they don't feel like anyone around them gets them or understands them or can talk to them about it, or that they can be honest about it with. And so they have found community online in a way that's really positive, and that are actually just even finding different expressions of identity in that space so that they can kind of figure out who they are and explore and be like, mm-hmm. And I bring it up a lot because it's not talked about. Again, it's all just villainized, and it's like, oh my goodness, wait, hold on. Again, it's not going anywhere. So let's try to figure out what is working, what's not working. Let's actually and the girls want to be a part of the conversation. There's a lot of adults all, you know, figuring it out for them. And that's not true. I mean, the girls always tell me whenever they hear people hating on social media, they're always like, oh, they've clearly never talked to a teenage girl. Like, that's how they feel. Mm-hmm. They just feel so left out of it in a way that's
right. Right. And you reference the amazing work of the Trevor Project, who has been tracking the mental health of the LGBTQ plus community for some time now. And, you know, we have to keep talking about this, that as a group, that community compared to others who are not in that community have a higher incidence of depression, a higher incidence of anxiety, a higher incidence of suicidal thinking and suicide attempts and suicide.
Yes.
And so this is very real in a time where, again, we are evolving. Our humanity is evolving, and the percentage of young people who identify as either gender or sexually fluid is just continues to increase. Like this, for this generation, this is all mostly normal. I say mostly because there are parts of the country which, you know, it depends where you live. We're on the West Coast, so I think we do have to identify that there are places and pockets that are more affirming, accepting, and safe than other parts. But there is a movement.
Oh my gosh. Is there ever? I mean, the amount of girls, I mean, we're talking the majority of the girls I work with like to identify on this spectrum. I mean, they hate being put in a box and have their sexuality put in a box. And I mean, that's why I've had to talk about it in a big way, because I don't think people realize how much it's shifting and how much they can't even wrap their brain oftentimes around, like, wait, are people not accepting of this? Because most of them, you know, the average age, they don't have hard research on it, but it's looking at like the average age to come out now is 14.
Mm-hmm.
And that when older adults hear that, they're like, what? You know, they're used to people coming out and they're at the earliest, late 20s, right? And again, they're dealing with so much trauma by the fact that they've had to feel hidden and shamed for so long. So actually, we're looking at something super exciting for kids coming out at 14 in a way that maybe they get to express who they are and their identity and what feels authentic to them at such a younger age. And what does that look like in terms of this new experience?
And why does this scare us so much, right? The group, quote, us. Why is this so scary? Because it's a change, and it goes against the way things are, quote, supposed to be, according to, you know, the way some people think. And I do want to respect all types of thinking and also draw the line where some types of thinking is harmful for people's well-being, right? And so you talk about the box, and that's something, I mean, our kids have taught us. Like this, we were all programmed, being Gen Xers, I believe, Gen Xers. Like everything's boxy. Like this, what's your career? What's your gender? What's your sexuality? What's your time frame? What, like, it's all boxy, and there's all this comfort. If we were to look at like all this perceived comfort and perceived sense of control in these boxes, it's all complete BS. It's totally BS if we actually like listen to these younger people showing us that it doesn't have to be this way, but it's a transition for the older generations, for those of us who were raised that way, who lived that way. But things don't have to be in a box. Nothing has to be in a box.
Yeah. And I love everything you're saying so much. And I also found too that when we try to force a kid into a box, they feel misunderstood, completely misunderstood. And the truth is, I love to look for what makes them unique. And I'm actually going to use the word weird because it triggers something a little bit different. And because when you find what makes your kid, because I think weird is a positive thing. Mm-hmm. And when you find what makes your kid weird, that's where their authenticity lies. And if you can affirm that and make them feel good about it, and not that they're abnormal and, you know, not doing the right thing that everybody else is doing in society, And you can actually make them lean into it in a way that they feel empowered into their own weirdness, uniqueness. Right. That is where real magic starts happening.
Yes. And there is a change in a lot of places. I'm actually thinking of also now many of the teenage cisgendered males, particularly who have told me multiple, like, I'm like, I don't fit in because I'm like too like regular or typical. Like I'm the minority. And like in some of these pockets, like there's such a change happening. And like you said, giving space, trying to affirm and support the uniqueness instead of the, what I would say is the old school whack-a-mole technologies where you like bonk that thing out. Like, you know, the old school of like, wait, no, your hair's not, your hair, you can't dye your hair. No, you can't get that piercing. No, you can't. I mean, and the list goes on and on and on. That's not helpful when it, like, I, again, understand parents, like it's could be concerning. However, it doesn't help growth. It actually creates more internal problems, external problems, and more relationship conflict. Yes. And actually, you know, let's move to identity. It actually keeps people, these young adults, these emerging adults, to take longer to figure out who they are by these actions.
Oh, God, I so agree with you on everything you're saying. And, you know, to talk to those parents who are fearing that change in any way, I'll say, what do you want most? You want to connect with your kid in a deep, honest, loving way. And if you want to connect with your kid, they want to feel seen and heard exactly the way they are, understood. And that's how you, that's the key. So, you know, as much as you may want them to have the perfect grades or go to the perfect college, like you, if they're going to put up walls, if they feel like you're not getting them or like, that's not who they're, that's not their thing. And, you know, in the compliments chapter, which is kind of a surprise chapter for a lot of people, we're so used to kind of being like, you're amazing, like girl boss, you know, kind of these generalized compliments. And the more you can get specific about what their, again, their weirdness, and like I always say, increase it to 3 sentences, you know, on your compliments, then all of a sudden that affirms their most internal authenticity, and that grows. It's, you know, what you give energy to grows. And we like people based off of how we see ourselves through mm-hmm. their eyes. Mm-hmm. Your kid will like you better if they feel like they like themselves through your eyes. Yes. And part of making sure to communicate that is that you are affirming them in a way that they, that aligns with their natural flow.
Compliments on one side, apologies on the other side. Right. You talk these girls who that you quote, who my, you know, my dad has never apologized to me. And then the power of when in one situation, their parents learn to apologize and how that changed the whole relationship.
Yeah. 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 I ended the book in the conclusion with amends, which is not something I expected to do at all. And then it just kept coming up and kept in the girls. They kept sharing how much they just wanted an apology from their parents. And it's deep. It can be just a day to day owning your mistakes and taking responsibility in a mature type of way. But there's some, a lot of people want to kind of have a clean slate with their teenager. Maybe your teenager's already like 16, 17, and there's already some tension and conflict. And how do you create that clean slate? It takes some humility. It takes kind of going to them and asking her, you know, and just being like, hey, you know, I might not have handled the divorce well 5 years ago. Like, is there something I can make an amends about that still hurts for you? I want to own that. And like, and mm-hmm. that, oh my gosh, the girls told me if their parents, I mean, I quote the girls all in a row, just saying the impact it would have if their parents right. did an apology, and all of them said they would cry. They all said, I'd be so shocked. It's never going to happen. Right. It's the only thing I want from my dad. It's the only thing I've ever wanted. Like, I mean, it gutted me, their yeah. responses.
Yeah, parents listening, it literally is never too late to apologize for something where you had unintended negative consequences that you were aware of, or even that you weren't aware of for some time, and then you were made aware of later. It's never too late. It's like the most healing and human thing to do is to go back to your kids and say, hey, I'm sorry that happened. I should not have said that. this is what I was feeling at the time. This is how it came out. And, or it just could be, I'm sorry. You don't even have to, it's just a genuine, I'm sorry is so healing. It doesn't cost anything. You will not be losing any part of your identity. You will only be increasing your integrity and that potential connection with your child.
Connection. Yeah. That's what it is too. I mean, that's what motivates us to get through that kind of humble moment of doing something like that.
All right. It's time for sexuality. This is something that often is not talked about. And as you point out, we really need to talk about it when we want to have healthy teenage girls and teenage people. You say, rather than working to prevent and judge teenage girls' sexual choices, let's work to create a world that thoroughly educates everyone on sexual responsibility and pleasure. Ooh, pleasure.
What a big word.
Pleasure. Did we just say that?
I know I say in the book, you know, the words that everyone thinks they're scared of, you know, which are teen pregnancy and STDs and sexual assault. Actually, I've seen just as much fear around the idea of pleasure for girls. And in all fairness, boys with the media are very much permissioned and it's totally fine for them to seek pleasure in a sexual context. Like, that's not something that feels so abnormal. But a girl, what is that?
Right. Yeah. And I should say with our oldest, I'll admit when she first started dating, and it was hard for me as dad with our first, it was like all of this protection and, you know, I know what guys are like and like that worry. And, I don't know how well I handled it. I think I kept a lot of it internal and talked to my wife about it. And she was, of course, took a different perspective and was very helpful. And then by the time with our third child, but our second daughter, I just had I felt like I had a much different approach. It's like, okay, I've done this before. This is the way it works. And this is, I don't know. It's like, we just have to talk about how guys like to go out and have pleasure. Why is that not taboo? Right? Like, let's just talk about the responsibility, as you talk about, for males and females, the responsibility of sexuality and sexual behavior and consent, and the idea and teaching about pleasure.
Yeah. And, you know, by the way, it's understandable that people would be scared or worried because it's not been a safe world. You know, sexual assault is a total reality. Unfortunately, I am on the front lines of that fight of like, I'm often the very first person a girl tells that she's been sexually assaulted. And so in the book, I start with that actually saying, hey, what has happened is we've put all the responsibility and blame on the girls, right? The girls feel like apparently their outfit is to blame for everything. They're entirely responsible for a boy's inclinations. And and it's just, it's so harmful for them. And what if we put the focus where it should be, which is on teaching boys how to be sexually responsible also, which is teaching consent. And I share the stat in there that only 11 states require in their sex education curriculum that consent be taught. That explains a lot. Whereas I know tons of girls who take self-defense in school. I know more girls who take self-defense than learned consent education in their sex education curriculum. I mean, that's wild. And that tells us a lot about where the focus is. We just keep thinking that boys are unteachable on this. Like, what is the deal, right? Yeah. And then as soon as we can kind of really bring the conversation to where it should be, then we can open up a freedom and a space for a girl to explore what she needs to explore in this space. You know, and permission her to seek pleasure rather than fear on every front of this.
Yes. And there's lots of reasons, as you talk, I mean, just the history of, you know, culture and religion. And I mean, this goes way back. And again, we're, I think, in a revolution, you know, like there was the 60s, right? The sexual revolution of the 60s. I think we have a different version of just trying to bring this conversation out in a healthy, non-repressed way.
Yeah, exactly. And I'm not even trying to say it should be this way or should be that way. Like, I try to say, you know, what makes you uncomfortable about having these conversations with your kids? Go figure that out. Go deal with your own sexuality baggage first, because you're not going to then come at your kid with the right openness to have the right conversation. And in terms of that kind of revolution you're talking about, in terms of feminism, we're definitely at that wave that's like, women can be all things. They can be both smart and sexy. And that wasn't, you know, third wave feminism was a little bit like, oh, I just have to be so smart and hard to hide my body and like kind of, you know, it was different. And now the girls I work with are like, women can be all things, like we can do it all. And I love that. And how do we embrace that in a way that feels healthy and good?
Yes. And then there is the trap, though, of doing all things perfectly, right? There's it is, but I hear what you're saying. It's like it is true, but I think women are expected to do all things more than like men as a whole. Men are like supposed to do this and that.
Yes, exactly. I don't mean that they need to be sexy perfectly or be smart perfectly. Actually, what I mean is more space to explore whatever their authentic identity is.
Yes. So. Yes. And when it comes to exploring, I think of other aspects that you mentioned, like messiness.
Right.
The permission, the space to be a mess.
Yeah, which women aren't allowed. That's not a thing.
And how important, though, you talk about with your students and what you teach us parents to do is to be okay with the mess and to allow the mess.
Yeah, to just be like, yeah, okay, that sucks. And also because it's our humanity. We are imperfect humans. Every single person's imperfect. And so actually when I let her be a mess and I'm like, oh, I struggled with that too. And like, she doesn't feel alone in it. Then she actually can just be human and not gripped in tension. Again, trying to put on a good show of being pleasing and likable. And it's that space where we actually then again connect in a real way.
Mm-hmm. When did you realize this was your calling?
This has been a long journey, actually. Like, I started tutoring 16 years ago as like a side job, right? I was writing, screenwriting in LA. And then there was moments where I optioned a script and I was like, wait, no, I can't stop with the girls. This is so meaningful. And I just knew like it was so meaningful. And then when I started volunteering my time, my husband was like, really, Chelsea, you're taking on another volunteering thing, like a big project. And I was like, I have to, like, this, I know I can show up for them in the right way. I'm built for this and meant for it. Right. And so then it was so funny years later, how much all of it came together. I had no idea I was going to write a book until 2 years ago. And it descended upon me of like, oh, pie in my face. Turns out the most meaningful thing I've been spending my time on has been right in front of me and exactly the stories that need to be told to the world. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's been quite a revelation.
you are meant for this and built for this. And you followed your bliss, right? You just followed it. And what full circle, writing screenplays and to writing this book, which is going to impact so many. I mean, it's so just down to earth and so real. And I know you've been getting this positive feedback. I mean, besides the people who
we just had Oprah, we just had Oprah Daily quote me, and then they posted an excerpt that they entitled, "If you have a teenage girl in your life, you need to read this." And I was like,
wow.
"What just happened?"
Wow! Yes, yeah. Everyone, like that's how important this book is that I'm holding right here.
Sign off.
That is so awesome. Like your whole book is peppered with the question I'm gonna ask you, but still for the people who haven't read it yet, what is your ultimate hope for this book, this information in the world?
Oh God, there's so many answers to this, but I hope that through these, you know, there's real practical tools and techniques, I can open up conversations and true connection and true honesty in a way that starts making space and permissioning women and girls to step into their full authenticity and full power.
Boom.
By the way, I just did that on the fly. That was not me just having
a All right, we're going to have to quote that one. Like, that's a boom. All right. That is powerful. That is powerful. And you are modeling and exuding your power for everyone you work with and throughout the book. You are modeling the power And I know you give, some credit back to them, but you are really modeling.
Well, it has been fun for the girls to see this happen to me. I mean, they are cheering me on like nobody's. I mean, they text me every day. They're all helping with book tour stuff. I mean, they're helping however they can to just like, cause they just are so excited that, you know, for me, they've been there. You know, I was their tutor, right? Or their mentor or something. And now they're seeing it explode, Oprah level explosion that it's been. Yeah, I got to model for them like, hey, you can step into this too. Like, look at what I just did.
So cool. So cool. Okay. Unfortunately, it's time for the parent footprint moment question, only unfortunately because there is just so much more to talk about. But here we go. Tell us about a time that you became aware of yourself as an individual, aware of yourself in your coaching, mentoring role, or even an awareness of your own parents. And that new awareness had a positive impact on your life, your students, and or everyone you love.
Yeah. I think that has to do with my own grappling with my mom, you know, my parent dynamics, and realizing the revelation came when I realized they were just functioning out of their history, their psych, you know, their familial cycle. And so any kind of wounds that might've happened that were handed down to me, I can now look compassionately at them and be like, oh, they were functioning out of the same broken system, right? Mm-hmm. We're all kind of just doing the best we can. And that's so liberating because then you're not a victim. You're not like blaming, you're not gripped by that story anymore. You can release it compassionately. And then it allowed me to bring that type of healing to girls that might be, you know, experiencing something similar and bring that to them and help them navigate it in a healthier way. Breaking the cycle. Mm-hmm.
Breaking the cycle. And the compassion and the awareness that our parents were kids raised by parents who were kids raised by parents. And it just, the human condition it can be really hard and everyone's a product of where they came from. And all we can do is continue to try to grow, be aware, and do our best in our own lives and then for those we are caring for.
Totally.
Chelsea, wow, this is so cool. I'm so excited for you. I'm just so excited for what this work has become and will continue to do for you and all of the young ladies that you have met and the I'm going to say millions that you will not ever meet, but will benefit from what you have put out there.
Thank you. Chills. Thank you.
All right. Tell everyone where to find it, how to support you and how to follow this journey.
You know, you can buy the book wherever books are sold, where you like to buy them. Underestimated, The Wisdom and Power of Teenage Girls. And you can follow me on Instagram at Chelsea Gooden. That's probably the easiest way to get updates. I have a book tour for the month of March. I'll be in LA, New York, Seattle, Denver. I mean, I love to meet everyone. And there's a lot of updates. There's things beyond Oprah that I have not updated yet, and that it's going to be some exciting news that's going to happen.
Awesome. Well, we are going to follow your journey and so glad that we're connected and let's stay connected. And anyway, we can support all the work you're doing. We are happy to.
Thank you so much. Yeah. I love this conversation. Yeah. Thank you.
Wow, everyone. I know many of you know teenage girls and have teenage girls in your life in some way, in some capacity. So please share this episode with everyone that you think will benefit. And please tell everyone about this book, Underestimated, The Wisdom and Power of Teenage Girls. There is so much wisdom and so much power in the book, along with lots of what to do and what to say throughout the book and in the appendix too. It is organized just so wonderfully by all of these really key chapters about theme issues that all teenage girls go through these days. It's intense out there, and it's our job to cultivate, empower, hold space, and just help ignite the power of these people. Thank you for listening. Thank you for being a part of our community. Thank you for your 5-star reviews. You know what I'm going to ask you to do. Try to be that person you want your child to become, and ask yourself the guiding question, what footprint do you want to leave? This has been a Peters and Rossi production. Parent Footprint with Dr. Dan is produced by Laura Rossi. Our engineer is Phil Rossi. Theme music is Strummer Man, composed and performed by ProTunes. Artwork is by Garrett Ross. Follow us on Instagram and Facebook at Parent Footprint Podcast and on Twitter at Dr. Dan Peters. For more information, go to exactlyrightmedia.com.